This is an iHeart podcast.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations. Thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Whatever team Fee is on has a chance to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast, In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Ben Ferguson.
And I'm Ted Cruz. Three times a week, we do our podcast, Verdict with Ted Cruz.
Nationwide, we have millions of listeners.
Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we break down the news and bring you behind the scenes, inside the White House, inside the Senate, inside the United States Supreme Court.
And we cover the stories that you're not getting anywhere else.
We arm you with the facts to be able to know and advocate for the truth with your friends and family.
So download Verdict with Ted Cruz now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Why is our economy in such bad shape? I mean, it's a great question, right? Why is the economy in such a disaster? GDP down 0.9 in the second quarter. That means we're in a recession. You know that. I know that. Doesn't matter how much the White House chooses to lie like this about it, we're in a recession.
Well, we're certainly in a transition, and we are seeing slowing as we all would have expected. But I think if you look at the full data and the type of data that NBER looks at, virtually nothing signals that this period in the second quarter is recessionary.
President Biden has said we've entered a new phase in our recovery, focused on achieving steady, stable growth without sacrificing the gains of the last 18 months.
Look at it more broadly at the data, and that's why we're seeing what we're seeing is that we are in a transition.
It doesn't seem that the U.S. economy is in recession right now.
That doesn't sound like a recession to me. Thank you very much.
But we are. This is, despite all those lies, we are. You know it, I know it. You're a smart person, you get it. But why are we? Well, this is the part that's very, very difficult to make people understand. Now, not you. I'm not worried about you. Not worried about me. This is the part that's very difficult to make normal people who agree with you on the issues. It's hard to make them understand. Your neighbor, your aunt, your cousin, your brother, he doesn't really follow politics. He doesn't watch I'm Right every night. It's not really that involved. So he doesn't get it. Maybe he thinks, oh, they're screwing up. Oh, Biden's an idiot. Oh, they made a mistake. That's the normal way of thinking. But it's really, really important for everyone to fully grasp. The reason we're hurting, it's because they want us to hurt. The destruction you're seeing out there, this recession we're in, that's on purpose. They're driving the economy off a cliff on purpose. And I'll get into the why in a second. Just hang on a second. Please understand that nothing's about to get better. And I don't say that to bring you down. I say that so you know nothing's about to get better because there's no one out there who actually wants to make it better. The people who lead your country, not just the politicians, by the way, entertainers, educators, across the board, the people who lead your country, run all your cultural institutions, FBI, I mean, the works, they all have the same three things in common. What are those three things? We've talked about it before. No love of country. A lot of them hate the country, but there's just no patriotism inside. America, that doesn't exist. Like, it exists in you, it's not in there. No connection to the real world. All these people have lived their entire lives in academia and Washington, D.C., or fancy newsrooms. They don't know what you go through. And three, They believe they should rule as kings and queens. And as America-hating kings and queens like they are, they look at America, they look at the land of the free, and they despise it. But not just the country as a whole. I want you to understand this. They despise you, the normal human being. They hate them. They hate the fact that you love your freedoms. Your freedoms are holding the world back. Why aren't you giving everything over to them so they can rule as kings and queens and create the planet that they, the saintly kings, know how to make? That is how they think. You low, uppity peasant, wanted to drive your car, work where you want. You want air conditioning right now in the summertime. They have nothing but disdain for you. And because of that, they're punishing you. You won't give them your freedom. You've been stubborn like that. So instead, they're simply going to destroy the country around you, and then they'll be able to rebuild it. I mean, the Inflation Reduction Act that increases spending?
Are you saying that Mitch McConnell and others in the Senate are wrong about those numbers and that Americans' taxes are not going to go up
totally
beyond
wrong.
That point?
Totally, absolutely wrong. Totally wrong. And here's the
All
thing.
Right.
They're looking at it through political lenses. Look at it through the American lens.
I'm just asking
Look
questions.
At it as, I'm just answering questions.
Okay.
I want to answer these questions because what you're asking and the facts you have are completely wrong.
But they're not wrong. Joe Manchin knows that too. Again, they're trying to wreck the place. And that's really, I mean, really it all comes back to the COVID stuff, the COVID lockdowns. I know you remember, I'm sure you were right there with me screaming that 15 days or so the spread was idiotic and suicidal. And yeah, we were basically putting ourselves on a path for destruction. But you should understand that they all knew that too. They knew it, all the politicians. Senators, congressmen, governors, mayors, they all knew. You can't just point to an economy and stop it. It doesn't work that way. What kind of fairyland do you live in? They know. They viewed it as an opportunity to wreck us. And they did. They took advantage of it. And the most amazing, I shouldn't say the most amazing, because there's so many amazing parts of it. When we deal with inflation right now, I know you're feeling it. You feel it at the grocery store. You feel it at the gas pump. You feel it everywhere. I mean, have you talked to a contractor about having something built lately? Anyway, I know you're feeling it. The most amazing thing is we shut down an economy. We stopped our economy from moving, and we printed $7 trillion. And now we have people like Jerome Powell acting shocked about the inflation.
In the end, it's not going to be. In the end, it will be transitory. And people need to have faith in the central bank that we will do that.
So I think the word transitory has different meanings to different people. To many, it carries a sense of short-lived. We tend to use it to mean that it won't leave a permanent mark in the form of higher inflation. I think it's probably a good time to retire that word and try to explain more clearly what we mean.
Okay. The man who's still in charge of the Fed is lying about what transitory means. He lied about being able to fix it. They lied about virtually everything. I'm a moron, and I knew that printing $7 trillion and stopping an economy was going to create inflation. Every single person knew that. Okay, so what do you do? Now we're in a bad situation. We have a recession that we're in. We have bad inflation. What do you do? I mean, obviously, as you know, you probably want to dial back on the spending, cut back on taxes if at all humanly possible, get the government's hands off the economy so it can start rolling again, just get the government out of the way. Well, that's what you would do because you're actually trying to save the economy. If you wanted to destroy the economy, you would go all in on the climate change death cult stuff at this point in time, and that's exactly what they're doing. They're not looking at this recession and inflation and saying, man, hey, maybe this climate change stuff should wait, guys. They're looking at this thing as a gigantic opportunity to go full speed ahead and destroy everything. Everything. Listen to Gina McCarthy.
He is going to move forward with every power available to him to make the change and the shift to clean energy.
And I hope you're not sitting there thinking, okay, well, someone's going to hold that hideous hag back and not let her do it. Surely the finance people will step in. Well, that's the problem we have right now. The finance people, including private corporations in this country, the finance people were all in on it. They're all in on the climate change death cult stuff. So we're surrounded by these people. This is Janet Yellen.
I think climate change is an existential threat to our globe and to our future. You can see that countries, it is a long-term risk, but it is becoming notably more severe. I do believe that transition risks are very real as more and more countries adopt frameworks that are meaningful to address climate change. We could see significant changes in asset valuations that pose risk to financial institutions.
We're in trouble because they're trying to kill us. And I know that's very direct. But if you're sitting here thinking we just have a bunch of, well, they're just a bunch of well-meaning liberals up there. I mean, sure, they're making mistakes, but they'll get it worked out. They're not making any mistakes, not in their eyes. This is what they've always wanted. They've always viewed America as this hideous, racist, evil empire that deserves to be brought to its knees. We need to be knocked down a peg or 20, and they are going to do it. That's why we are where we are. And if you don't understand that's their mentality, you will never be able to take them on. And more than that, because I'm not worried about you, tell your neighbor, tell your friends, explain to them the destruction is intentional. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I'm right. We got Grover Norquist up next. Talk to us about it.
Well, a recession is 2 quarters in a row of negative growth.
Wow. Thanks, Bill. I didn't know. See, I always thought that was a definition of recession, but it seems to have been muddled a little bit lately. Let's talk to Grover Norquist about that. Of course, he's the president of Americans for Tax Reform. Grover, I mean, we are in a recession, right? I feel like the definition seems to be a moving object.
It wasn't until the Biden administration decided they didn't want inflation plus a recession. They decided it couldn't actually be inflation. It was Putin. It was greedy businessmen. It was transitory. It was over by December, last December. And then when they finally gave up on denying inflation, they're now denying the recession. So it's not a bad trick if you're 4 years old, but it doesn't really work for adults.
You say it doesn't work, but that's actually what worries me, Grover. Does this stuff work on enough people? I realize it's not going to work on you. I'm not worried about that. But if they have their media lackeys out there, all the major news publications are rags in this country. They're all carrying that message forward. Surely that has to be more effective than you and I would like.
Yes, but what we do see is the collapse numbers for Biden. And that tells you there may be some people who still like him for some other reason, but even they kind of know inflation's happening. Even they know they have a recession. But if it wasn't getting through to the American people every time they fill up a car with gas, every time they go to the grocery store, his numbers wouldn't be as abysmal as they are.
Grover, Joe Biden says he's not going to raise taxes on people making less than $400,000 a year. They're not backing off of that. This is something they've pushed over and over and over again with the Inflation Reduction Act, which is hilarious, by the way. Is he lying?
Liar, liar, pants on fire. Yes, he's lying all day, top to bottom. There isn't anything in the statement that he won't raise taxes on anyone who makes less than $400,000 that he isn't lying about. There are three taxes on energy in the first iteration of this bill. Who knows how it changes as it goes forward? There's a tax on crude oil. There's a tax for gasoline. There's a tax on natural gas. And there's a tax on coal. So everybody who uses energy, you're getting hit. Then they have a tax on businesses that invest a lot. Half of the tax that companies are paying are in manufacturing. Why? Because they buy expensive machines, they expense them, And then they're going to say, oh, you can't do that. We're going to take 15% tax on the value of the machine you just bought as if it was profit. But it's a machine. It's not profit. We hope to make profits, but it's the machine we bought. Not 15% tax on your new investment. That's what they're looking to do. Who does that hit? 70% of the corporate income gets paid by workers in lower wages, 30% by higher costs of buying consumer goods. So middle-income people get hit all the way through. And the Congressional Joint Tax Committee, Congressional Budget Office, just put out a statement that half of the taxes hit people who earn less than $400,000 a year.
Half of them. Okay, Grover, what kind of tax increase are we talking about here, man? I've got a wife. I've got kids. I don't have unlimited money. What kind of taxes are we talking about?
Well, if you sell one, you might be able to pay off the others. Look, those are assets. Those are assets. Now they're taxing assets. Yeah. Look, this is a significant, over $300 billion in tax, actually $700 billion in taxes. The $300 billion is new. And then they're also confiscating the value of drug companies by saying we're going to put price controls on new drugs that you invent. So somebody out there who is planning to solve or do something to help with fight Alzheimer's is going to look at that and say, let me get this right. I spend $1 billion trying to get an Alzheimer's drug. I get it. And the government steps in and says, we'll give you a nickel apiece for your pills. Yeah, that's the law. That is the law they want. And they're going to save a lot of money. But it also going to say, if you're interested in solving problems for people's health, go to Switzerland, not the United States.
Good grief. Okay. 87,000 new IRS agents. Do I have that right? Are we short on IRS agents, Grover?
They are doubling the number and the size of the IRS in terms of number of people who work there. Why? Good question. This is a group that half of them don't ever show up to work at all. They work out of home. The other half, we don't know how often they show up. They're not willing to admit whether they're 90% of the time or 10% of the time. But they are willing to admit that 53% of them are never at work. Those are the people who don't answer your phone when you call in and have a question for the IRS. They want to give them not just $80 billion in money. They want to hire 87,000 people. What will they do with that? The IRS has told us what they'll do. They're going to go after small businesses. The president says, oh, we're going after big corporations and rich people. Big corporations and rich people already have the IRS all over them because that's where they think the cash is. And now they're trying to go after smaller businesses. And the IRS in their own press releases says that's who we're targeting because they don't like independent contractors. They don't like small businesses. Half of the taxes that are being put on, the new taxes they want to put on businesses are on manufacturing, half on manufacturing.
Good grief. Okay, Grover, all this seems extremely destructive. It seems intentional. If you were to go down a list on how to just tear through an economy, this is how you would do it. Do these people want to destroy the economy?
They want to control the economy so they can control people. They don't like independent contractors, so as California did, they passed a law banning being an independent contractor. Everyone has to have a boss and pay union dues. Since the union dues get recycled to the modern Democratic Party, and that's part of the reason to give $80 billion to hire 87,000 IRS agents, they join the local union, and that union, the IRS union, gives 100% of the party money that it gives to the Democrat Party. 98% of all the money they give to candidates goes to Democrats. So if you give the IRS enough money to hire 87,000 people, you will get a lot of dues that go straight to the Democrats. It's a pre-funding of the next election. And if you subsidize solar and wind, what happens? Well, they're dependent on government, which means they are Democrats, which means they write checks to Democrats to keep the money flowing to their business that would not work if it had to make a living and run a profit and didn't need subsidies.
Gosh, what a bunch of dirtballs. Grover Norquist, thank you so much. I appreciate it, brother.
You got it. About as cheerful as it gets.
There are very few Congress people I like, as you know. Thomas Massie is one of the very few who's been fighting for us from day one. Lockdown stuff, everything. Thomas Massie's been there for us. He's going to join us next.
The average household uses 17% of their electricity for air conditioning. And that would mean the average household uses 1,870 kilowatt hours per year for air conditioning. If that average household plugged in electric cars, do you know how much more electricity they would use in comparison to the air conditioning that air conditions their whole house?
No, but again, I would emphasize it will
be less
energy overall.
Let me help you with that first before we go on, because the numbers are important. It would take four times as much electricity to charge the average household's cars as the average household uses on air conditioning. Do you think that could be? So if we reach the goal by 2030 that Biden has of 50% adoption instead of 100% adoption, that means the average household would use twice as much electricity charging one of their cars as they would use for all of the air conditioning that they use for the entire year.
Quite a line of questioning, no? Joining me now, the great congressman from the state of Kentucky, Thomas Massie. Congressman, facts, these communists just always seem to run up against them, and boy, they don't know what to say. They start stuttering and trying to filibuster their way out of it. It's quite enjoyable to watch, I have to say.
Well, I love numbers. You know, I went to MIT, and even the buildings there are named after numbers. Every class is a number there. So that's what I brought the Congress with me. The other thing people don't know, most people don't know, is I live off the grid. I have to produce all of my own electricity, and I've owned an electric car for 10 years. So it literally comes down to that sometimes in our house. We have to decide, are we going to charge the car or are we going to run the air conditioning? So I don't think that's a choice that a lot of people are ready to make or have to make. And the government's not telling them that.
Something else the government isn't telling them, and it is, look, it's a point that's been made 1,000 times. I don't want to act like it's my original point, but people, do they genuinely think this electricity just magically falls down from the sky somewhere? You talk about all these electric cars. That means you need coal and natural gas and oil to actually power the electric car. Do they not get it, or are they just lying?
Well, that's why I have Friends of Coal license plates on my electric car, because even though I can charge it at my house with solar panels and drive part of the way to D.C., I have to stop in West Virginia and charge it with coal. So here's the other thing, Jesse. Some people, as a rebuttal to my interaction there with Secretary Buttigieg, have said, well, Massey's not taking into account that you could charge the car at night and run your air conditioner in the day when the heating, you know, is so great from. And I'm like, but wait, the solar panels don't work at night. This is exactly what we're talking about, the distribution of electricity. The grid is not ready for it. And I asked Secretary Buttigieg if he thought the grid was going to be ready. He said it needs to be. You've got to go listen to what he said. He didn't say it will be. He said it needs to be. And I said, I'm not talking about your needs or wants or wishes. I'm talking about engineering, not the political science.
Congressman, we're obviously talking recession and economics right now. And I've got to be honest, I don't believe in any of this climate change crap anyway. I think that's insane. But that aside, even if you are one of these people who does believe in it, aren't we in the worst possible time for these people to try and do this thing? It's almost like they're trying to wreck us. We have inflation. We have a recession. I believe it's going to be a very, very deep recession. I think we're in the very beginning stages of that. This is the last possible time you try to slash energy and crush the power grid. People can't afford things now. What are they thinking?
Well, you know, some of the liberals want you to have a lower quality of life, a lower standard of living. And so they're actually happy. They'd be happy if gasoline were $10 a gallon. But you're right. This isn't a game for everyday Americans. They shouldn't be pressured into this because it's the difference between putting gas in your car to go to work or buying the groceries that week when the inflation is this great. It's the wrong time to do this. They're trying to do it at too quick of a rate. It doesn't make sense. Yet, by the way, Jesse, behind the scenes, occasionally I talk to Democrats in the halls of Congress when the cameras aren't pointed at them. And some of the ones who are more honest, I'll ask them, I told one of them after they passed a gun control bill, I said, you can pass all the gun control you want, but if gasoline is still as high as it is right now in November, you guys are going to take a drumming. And this Democrat, I'm not going to call him out, he said, you're absolutely right. I'm telling my colleagues, lay off the green stuff. Lay off the green stuff. And, you know, they haven't brought out John Kerry for another hearing on joining the Paris Climate Accord.
All right. Joe Biden. Well, Joe Biden is a liar. Here he is lying.
Already on my watch, deficits come down my first year by $350 billion and a record $1.7 trillion the end of this fiscal year.
Man, I had no idea he was such a fiscal conservative. That's awesome.
What is he talking about? You know, somebody needs to fact check it. But, you know, he's conditioned to lying. He also pointed out that gasoline had its sharpest drop in prices, you know, in 20 years. Well, that's because it was almost $5 a gallon in Kentucky, and it went down to $4 a gallon. You know, if gasoline is indeed going down, the reason is because, as you alluded to, we're starting into a recession. And this might be the one time we can give Joe Biden credit for the gas prices coming down to only twice of what they were when Trump was president, because he's causing the recession. And, you know, so what good is gasoline if you can get it down under $4 a gallon if people don't have the money to buy it because the groceries are so high?
Congressman, there's a lot of talk on the Republican side today about inflation this and inflation that, and we spend too much money and Democrats spend too much money. And I'm sorry, Congressman, but I'm an idiot. I still do remember 2 years worth of printing $7 trillion, trillion-dollar bill after trillion-dollar bill, and now Joe Biden's in there. It's very convenient to say, Democrats spend too much money. I remember what Republicans were doing, and it wasn't good.
Hey, I am glad you brought that up, because the first $2 trillion bill, I got pummeled for standing up against it. Now, Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer wrote the bill, but Donald Trump signed it. And, you know, I love Donald Trump, but it wasn't the right answer at the time to spend $2 trillion, not just the fact that we printed. And by the way, it ended up being $7 trillion, as you said. And our deficit went from like $23 trillion to $30 trillion. But actually, that part of the deficit, our debt, sorry, is kind of fake, because we borrowed it from ourselves and we monetized all that. We printed the money and then borrowed it from the department that prints it. So it's worse than actually borrowing the money. And I said at the time, Jesse, that we would have shortages and we would have inflation by following these policies and paying people not to work. And that's what we have. But Biden's continued on that trail, and now they've got this bill called, what, the Inflation Reduction Act? Give me a break. You can't spend your way out of this. You can't tax your way out either.
Yeah, you did stand against all this crap from the very beginning, and I credit you for it, because not many did. Congressman Thomas Massey, thank you so much, sir. Come back soon.
Thanks, Jesse.
You know I hate Democrats, but let's be honest. Does our side have a fiscal leg to stand on? Did you hear what he just said? We went from $23 trillion national debt to $30 trillion in 2 years. That is terrible and can't be blamed on Joe Biden. All right, we're still not done. We'll be back.
What do you say to those families who say, listen, we can't afford to pay $4.85 a gallon for months, if not years? This is just not sustainable.
Well, what you heard from the president today was a clear articulation of the stakes. This is about the future of the liberal world order, and we have to stand firm.
That doesn't sound very good, does it? Let's ask Mark about it. Joining us now, Mark Morano, author of The Green Fraud and the forthcoming book, The Great Reset, Global Elites and the Permanent Lockdown. Mark, I don't know about you, but it didn't sound to me like Brian Deese was all that concerned about those gas prices.
Yeah, you got to do it for the new world order. I'm sorry, the new liberal order or the Great Reset, yes, or the, you know, whatever phrase you want. That was their moment of candor, I guess you'd say, in the alcoholic world, the moment of clarity. He actually said the quiet part out loud. And the quiet part is this as an agenda that deals with essentially the global corporations and global NGOs like the United Nations and the World Health Organization, these big quasi things that rule over us on with COVID and climate regulations. This is about them and their agenda. Kind of like, we don't care about you, the average. We're the masses. We're the unwashed masses. We don't have time to worry about you guys. We have to go to our paymasters and their agenda. That was literally what he was saying.
Mark, I try to explain to people often on this show that things aren't getting fixed anytime soon because the people who are in charge don't view what's happening as something bad. The destruction is intentional. They're wrecking this on purpose, for a purpose. They have a reason.
Yes, if you look at, just listen to the words. First of all, when they did the COVID lockdowns, all the environmental activists from Greta Thunberg to John Kerry, to Jane Fonda said it was God's gift to the left. COVID was God's gift to the left. You had them all praising the COVID lockdowns. If we can lock down the world for a virus, we can lock down the world for climate. Fast forward, and that's what we're seeing. Vladimir Lenin in Tsarist Russia, one of his expressions there before the Bolshevik Revolution, to overthrow and take over in Russia, was the worse is better or the worse the better. So when you see these progressive revolutionaries, ideologues in the Biden administration and academia, they're cheering this on. The more we can collapse our farming, collapse our economy, collapse our energy supply, the better it is to rebuild it in their image. In many ways, all the cabinet officials of Biden, they're treating this as though we've been diagnosed with a cancer, a terminal cancer. I'm saying that's the equivalent to the climate emergency. So they're giving us high dose chemotherapy, which is making us vomit. We're losing our hair. We have no energy. The problem is we don't actually have the cancer. So we've misdiagnosed. We're getting a massive intervention of health that we never needed. Our economy, our life didn't need it. So what they're doing is they're telling us this is so worth it because after we go through and collapse everything and have misery and inflation and supply chain and debt, we're going to be free of the climate crisis. That's why you had insane activists like Bill McKibben, friend of Al Gore, climate activist, national leader, come out and say that Joe Manchin's no vote when he was going to vote against this pork barrel climate bill was going to alter the geologic history of the earth. He said the earth would have a note. So in other words, if you vote no on a pork barrel spending bill, one pork barrel spending bill in Washington, somehow we're going to end up with the geologic era of the earth named. You have the Jurassic, the Holocene, and now the Manchocene. Of course, Manchin caved, and now they're all cheering this as we're going to now solve the climate. We had University of California professors, as reported in the New York Times, holding their children and sobbing when they thought Manchin wouldn't support this climate bill. But now he is. So, I mean, I'm almost at the edge of mental illness at this point.
Mark, I would love to be able to dismiss it as just a mental illness, but I don't think people truly understand how much death comes with these people getting what they want. This is the deadliest ideology in the history of the world. Hitler, Mao, Stalin, I mean, all of them combined wouldn't come close to the death count these people will bring about if they're allowed to put these policies into place. People don't understand we're on the verge of mass murder, genocide.
Yeah, in fact, you have to be very careful with the word. You're absolutely right. It hasn't happened yet, but they have now because of the advances in technology that people like George Orwell foresaw. We are now on the verge. If you look back at the great leap forward was Mao's in the late 1950s, his agricultural revolution, where essentially as a farmer, you had to meet an ideology. And if you didn't, you could be, you know, enemy of the state. You could be destroyed. You could lose your farm. So you made up stuff and you put up all these fake numbers. So they were getting glowing reports back about how great everything was doing, going well in China. But meanwhile, people were going through a horrible famine and starving and dying. But it didn't matter because it was all in service to the state. And on paper, everything looked good. So in a way, it's almost like what they're doing now. Right now, they're, because they've collapsed our energy supply, they're like, that's pretty good. Now let's go after the food supply. So we have in the Netherlands, in Sri Lanka, in Canada, in Albania, coming to the United States, all these new restrictions on fertilizer because the planet can't handle it. And so what they're doing is they're getting rid of all the small independent farmers. Now think about that. These are generational run family farms in the Netherlands, the number one meat exporter in Europe. Why are they being targeted? Because the people behind this, China's buying up U.S. farmland. But don't worry, it's not a land monopoly of China because Bill Gates is competing with them. I don't know who you want to win, China, Bill Gates. Bill Gates is now America's number one single largest farmland owner, according to NBC News. What is Bill Gates' agenda? Fake meat, lab-grown, vegetable-processed, cultured meat. That's his agenda. What's the World Economic Forum and the United Nations who are pushing this collapse of agriculture in Europe now? Insect eating. In fact, we have multiple reports out, the United Nations, World Economic Forum, touting the protein and the yumminess of eating insects. They don't want us eating meat. They want us eating lab-grown fake meat, and they want us eating insects. They want to collapse the current system because that's how you do, in the words of the World Economic Forum from Davos, who you have on the screen there, Klaus Schwab, a great reset is necessary. And we have a narrow, rare window of opportunity since COVID to do it, is his words. And that's what they're trying to impose upon us.
Mark, help me understand why so many of these billionaires, politicians, not just in America, around the world, as you've pointed out, why would they sign on for this? Because it does, look, I'm an idiot and I know about the death that's coming. It doesn't take a genius to figure out if you declare war on oil and gas, when the world runs on oil and gas, you're going to destroy the world. That's easy to figure out. Why?
Well, because they're doing it to prevent death. In other words, I don't know. Someone like Justin Trudeau, because he's a good example. He actually went through, in the words of Klaus Schwab, who you just had on the screen, we penetrate the cabinet. He's one of the people that they penetrate. He went through the young leaders program of the World Economic Forum. And the idea is we have to save the unwashed masses from themselves. Because if left to their own devices, they'll have death. They'll be killing themselves. We need gun control. They're going to create inequity, racism, white supremacy. They're going to destroy the environment. They're going to create a climate crisis. So we need to manage every aspect of their life. So there's going to be a messy transition. And during this economic collapse, there's going to be people displaced. There's going to be death. There's going to be, and they're looking at it as, in the end, it's going to be okay because the experts are going to be in charge of everyday people. No longer are we going to allow the masses to essentially decide their own fate and their own life and own property. The latest reports coming out, by the way, the World Economic Forum is pushing an end to private car ownership. Not making this up. These are their exact quotes. This goes after a long history. Other people who they penetrated, the cabinet, the UK transport secretary actually came out and said, owning a car is 20th century outdated thinking. The head of the Netherlands, where all this is happening, is one of the penetrate the cabinet. He's another one of the apostles of Klaus Schwab and the World Economic Forum. That's why they're shutting down their agriculture. I mentioned the family-run farm. You have to understand the significance of that. They want to get rid of the independent family-run businesses, just like lockdowns got rid of the mom-and-pop small businesses in favor of big tech, big corporations, because the bigger you are, the more pressure that go along with the woke environment, social governance, ESG agenda. But ultimately, we know socialism kills. We know lockdowns kill. We know central planning kills. But they don't look at it that way because in their minds, it's never been done correctly. So you ask the question, how do they follow? They look back at Stalin. They look back at Mao. They look back at East Germany and Eastern Europe under the Soviet domination, and they say, you know, socialism's never been done correctly. This never happened. So we're not going to repeat that. That's not happening here. And on top of that, we're seeing the same thing now with COVID and lockdowns. They're actually saying things Fauci saying, had we known what we know now about COVID, we would have locked down much harder and earlier. At the same time, he says, I never supported a lockdown. But we have many on the left saying lockdowns were we're really locked down. Trump's own Surgeon General, Jerome Adams, we were never locked down. That wasn't really a lockdown. So anyone who criticizes the lockdown, they don't feel any culpability because we never locked down, according to them. Same thing in East Germany. We never actually tried socialism correctly. It didn't count. So they're asking for a blank slate. So you're looking at this through the rational eye of history, logic, facts. They're not. They're looking at it through ideology, and they're saying, well, you know, we're not responsible. All those people that died in the past, we're not doing it that way. They didn't do what we're doing. We're doing it different.
Mark Moreno, thank you, my brother. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, Jesse. Appreciate it.
All right. We'll be back. It's really bad. All right, I'm sorry. This is going to be dark. It's really bad. It's going to get worse. I'm not saying that to bring you down. I'm saying that so you understand. Every time there's a little breath of life, you think somewhere, oh, gas prices are down 50 cents or something. It's so easy to get caught up in the, oh, man, we hit bottom there, and we're about to come back. We're not about to come back. Not yet, anyway. I'm not saying we're finished, but not yet. The reason we're not about to come back is they're not going to let us. Remember, they're trying to wreck us. So if the economy is able to stick its head above water and take a quick breath, they're going to be right there chucking cinder blocks on our faces. That's what we have to deal with. We don't have to be down about that. We don't have to lay down and suck our thumb, but we do have to be aware that's the situation we're in. All right? Just have to be aware. We'll do it again.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations. Thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Whatever team Fee is on has a chance to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Ben Ferguson.
And I'm Ted Cruz. Three times a week, we do our podcast, Verdict with Ted Cruz.
Nationwide, we have millions of listeners.
Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we break down the news and bring you behind the scenes, inside the White House, inside the Senate, inside the United States Supreme Court.
And we cover the stories that you're not getting anywhere else.
We arm you with the facts to be able to know and advocate for the truth with your friends and family.
So download Verdict with Ted Cruz now, wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an iHeart podcast.